యమునా తీరవన శాన్ జయ ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. The verse is it 11:19:16? Oh, oops. Okay, 26. యద్ అర్పితం తద్ వికల్పే ఇంద్రియై పరిధావతి రజస్వదం చాసం నిష్ఠం చిత్తం విద్ధి విపర్యయం. యద్ అర్పితం తద్ వికల్పే ఇంద్రియై పరిధావతి రజస్వదం చాసం నిష్ఠం చిత్తం విద్ధి విపర్యయం. యదర్పితం తద్వికల్పే ఇంద్రియై పరిధావతి రజస్వదం చాసనిష్ఠం చిత్తం విద్ధి విపర్యయం. Sorry for the chant. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Did I already chant it? I didn't? Oh, sorry. Okay. Yat. When. arpitam, fixed, tat, this consciousness, vikalpe, immaterial variety, the body, home, family, etc. Indriye, with the senses, vadidhavati, chasing all around, raja valam, strengthened by the mode of passion, cha, also, asat, to that which has no permanent reality, nishtam, dedicated, chittam, consciousness, vidhi, you should understand, viparyayam, the opposite of what was previously mentioned. Translation: when consciousness is fixed on the material body, home, and other similar objects of sense gratification, one spends one's life chasing after material objects with the help of the senses. Consciousness, thus powerfully affected by the mode of passion, becomes dedicated to impermanent things. And in this way, irreligion, ignorance, attachment, and wretchedness arise. Purports by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. In the previous verse, Lord Krishna explained the auspicious results of fixing the mind in him. And now the opposite is explained. Rajasvalam indicates that one's passion grows so strong that one commits sinful activities and reaps all types of misfortune. Although materialistic people are blind to their impending wretchedness, one can confirm by all types of evidence, namely Vedic injunctions, direct observation, traditional wisdom, and inductive logic, that the result of violating the laws of God is disastrous. Translation: when consciousness is fixed on the material body, home, and other similar objects of sense gratification, one spends one's life chasing after material objects with the help of the senses. Consciousness, thus powerfully affected by the mode of passion, becomes dedicated to impermanent things. And in this way, irreligion, ignorance, attachment, and wretchedness arise. Om Gyanam Dharmandasya Gyanam Vijnana Shraka Chakshur Nintam Yena Tasmai Shri Guru Namaha. So, it's a beautiful verse. This verse, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he explains that in this chapter, Krishna is explaining the process of bhakti in the context of jnana, or the path of knowledge. And it is not pure bhakti, which is having faith and full surrender and taking shelter of Krishna directly from the very beginning. But the process, the way Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes it, is that the path of jnana, you uncover the awareness of the Atma. And the path of vigyan, which is realization, it's a very interesting description. The path of vigyan is when we are connect with our relationship with the Paramatma, or Krishna. So, ultimately, all processes should lead to bhakti. I was just thinking this morning how one way to look at the path of spiritual life is um, there's so many different paths, and our acharyas have given very detailed descriptions. If you read their commentaries, especially on the Bhagavad Gita and the Uddhava Gita, so many, it's very intricate. There's a lot of variety, so many different ways to arrive at Krishna's lotus feet eventually. But if you think about what path does Krishna take, it's kind of something we never think about. But what path does Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what path does he take? So he has nothing to gain by karmakanda. He's the source of everything. And there's nothing for him to gain in the path of karma, because he is the origin of the law of karma, and he has nothing to gain by jnana, because he's fully aware, satchidananda. But the only path he takes is the path of bhakti. So that should give us an indication of what path we should take. The Lord is very merciful, and he reciprocates with each and every person according to our individual desires. I was thinking how our desires represents our faith, doesn't it? Like if we have a desire to make a lot of money, we have faith that money can bring us happiness, right? That's a form of faith. Or if we want to go to the heavenly planets, we have faith that the heavenly planets exist and that we'll be happy in the heavenly planets. So, in the same way, Krishna reciprocates with our desires, but he reciprocates with our faith also. In the Gita, Krishna says, "Ye yatha mam prabhadyante tam sataiva bhajamyaham." And we deposit our faith wherever we take shelter. So if we take shelter of our own mind and our own ability to understand, our own intelligence, then we take the path of Sankhya Yoga or Jnana Yoga. Or if we take shelter of our own ability to work, to get results from that work, like that the famous pastime in the lifting of Govardhan Hill, Krishna was expounding the philosophy of karma mimamsa, that there's no God, but the God is our work. And that's also very famous, and that's a very popular philosophy in India, especially the most I heard, I'm not sure if this is accurate, but I heard that the most popular verse in India is karma neva adhikaraste ma phaleshu kadachna, but it's the focus is on work. Does anyone know the full translation? Karmanyeva adhikaraste ma phaleshu kadachna. Ma phala. Right. Yeah. We have the right to work, but not ma phaleshu. We don't have the right to the results. But our acharyas in Srila Prabhupada explains that the full meaning of that verse is in context of the entire Gita, which is Vignarthat Karmano, that Krishna is the object of our worship. That's the whole idea behind the Gita. So going back to my point that Krishna reciprocates with our faith and our desires, there's I was reading the commentaries by Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur on the Bhagavad Gita. It's called the Sarartha Varshini. And it is unbelievable how scientific Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur breaks down the yoga ladder. And there's like 20 different trajectories that he describes in detail. And I was thinking that so much variety, there's so much like complexity that that why does Krishna do that to us? And our acharyas explain that it's because Krishna is so compassionate, he's so merciful, that he wants to reciprocate with each and every one of our desires. The example, I believe, Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur explained that it's actually better that you're in the path of Vedic understanding than outside of the Vedic culture and doing the same thing. For instance, if I want sense gratification to the max, it's better that I stay within what's prescribed in Vedic literature, because Vedic literature gives you all the information you need to enjoy sense gratification at its ultimate peak. I mean, you cannot go beyond that sense gratification. If you study the Vedic literature, I mean, all of the entire vast knowledge base that's there, it gives you very specific descriptions and instructions how to enjoy sense gratification way beyond your wildest imagination. So even if you experimented outside of Vedic culture trying to enjoy, you will not be able to enjoy as much as you will if you follow the injunctions of the Vedas. And the purpose of that is because Krishna wants us to, he knows that if we follow the Vedic path, eventually we will come to him. But if we act independently and we're not on that path, then there's no hope of coming to him. So for those who are the fruitive workers, that when in our everyday lingo we use the word karmi frequently, karmi actually doesn't refer to, I mean, most of us know this, it doesn't refer to that person who practices karma yoga. It refers to the person who is karmakanda, who is following the path of karmakanda, which is where they're heavily attached to results of our activities and are attached to the activity as well. So you can do that very easily, you know, just outside, you know, of the Sanatana Dharma. But eventually, you'll lose taste. If you follow the Vedic path, you'll lose taste for those fruits of those results. And then when we lose taste of the results, we come to the path of karma yoga, and we lose taste for the activity itself. Not that we lose taste for the activity, but we lose the attachment to the activity. And then when we lose that attachment, then we come to the path of bhakti, where I'm fully surrendered to the spiritual master, whether he asks me to wash pots, clean the toilets, or become the most famous person, or become a politician, or, you know, whatever it is, I'll do it fully surrendered. And I'm equally attached to both. I'll be equally happy cleaning the toilets as I would being a politician or being a famous rock star. Either way, I'm equally as satisfied. I'm equally as happy. That's the path of bhakti. So we're not attached to the fruits, and we're not even attached to the activity. We're just attached to the pleasure of Krishna and the desire to please him. So verse, Yathama Prapadyante Tamste Vabhramihe Namavartvan Vartante Manusha Partha Sarvashaha. So what does that verse mean? There's, as we just talked about, there's thousands of different paths and different ways. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur talks about a lot of bhakti mixed with a little jnana, or a lot of jnana mixed with a little bhakti, or karma mixed with jnana, karma mishra jnana, bhakti mishra jnana, karma mishra. I mean, it's like unbelievable. Where, you know, you have faith in jnana, but there's a little bhakti, or you want to merge it within the impersonal Brahman, but you have to have a little bhakti in order to be able to do it. But so you're primarily focusing, you know, you have your primary path and your secondary path, and it's really amazing science. So when Krishna says, Ye yatama prabhadyante yatam satayu bhajamiham, and he's saying, Mama vartman vartante, that everyone follows my path. What does Krishna mean that everyone follows my path? It seems like he's saying that all paths are one. And of course we know Srila Prabhupada was heavily criticizes that philosophy that all paths are one. What is that Sanskrit? Yata pata? Yeah. What is it? Okay. Your path, my path, it's all. And they, you know, they actually justify the by Mama Vartamana Vartante. Krishna says that. That's not what Krishna says. He says, Yeyatama Prapadyante Tam Satayuda. What was before Mama Vartamana Vartante is Yeyatama Prapadyante. Is that as you approach me, I approach you. So he's reciprocating with our desires. So all paths are one in the sense that, Srila, I was just reading a purport the other day, that Srila Prabhupada says that everybody is serving Krishna, either favorably or unfavorably. But everybody is serving Krishna. So that is the purport to this verse. That everybody, since Krishna is everything, and Krishna is awarding us the results of whatever path we choose to take, we're all following his path. So going back to what we were talking about before, what is Krishna's path? And we determined, would everyone agree that Krishna's path is the path of love? Yeah. Who disagrees? Because love is the only thing that Krishna doesn't have. He doesn't have our love. I mean, of course he has the love of everybody in the spiritual world, but he doesn't have our love. He doesn't have, I mean, he has all of your love, he doesn't have my love. I have no love. But he wants that love. He's starving for the love of every single living entity. He's starving for the love of every single one. We have something that Krishna cannot have. It's pretty amazing, isn't it? It's actually empowering. It gives us a purpose in life. You know, there's something for me to live for. I have something that Krishna wants. He can't have it unless I give it to him. Right? That's pretty amazing. Think about it. That's amazing. So, Krishna's path in the material world is to come here again and again and again and again, and to send his agents again and again and again and again, and to inspire us in our heart as Chaitaguru again and again and again and again, and to give us all of these amazing literatures, like the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita and the writings of the Acharyas, and the association of devotees, the love and the compassion of the devotees. He's giving all of us these things so that we come closer and closer and closer and closer to him. Where we're at the point where we're actually in Krishna's association and serving him, and we're united in love. That I was a beautiful analogy that I was meditating on is the path of bhakti is the path of dependence. And if you just, you know, it's all, and it's really famous in the Hollywood movies. I mean, it's a famous kind of, what's that word? Can't think of the word. But, you know, you have an earthquake and the earth is parting. And it's going, and the chasm, or the chasm, is that how you pronounce it? Chasm. It's growing bigger and bigger and bigger. You know? And you have two lovers, one on either side. And they're reaching out. You know, they're reaching out. They're trying to hold each other's hands. And it's that's the path of bhakti. Krishna is reaching out his hand, and we're divided. And we are reaching out our hand. And it's not that Krishna is not dependent. It's in the Shastras, it's explained that Krishna is dependent on his devotee's love. And we are, should be, and you know, we're not even dependent on Krishna's love. That's so sad. That's why we're here. Krishna, who's like, he's the all in all. He's a sarvakarana karanam. He's Bhagavan, the source of aham sarvasya prabhu. And yet, he's dependent on our love. And we are so infinitesimal. We're so nothing. And we feel, and we're not even dependent on the Lord. Just see. Fallen condition. But Krishna, we're this chasm that's growing bigger and bigger, and this earthquake, this metaphor, is reaching out. Grab my hand. I need you. Not that I want to help you. He's saying, I need you. That's a remarkable. He's not trying to help us. Of course, he's helping us every second, every moment. But he's actually reaching out saying, I need you. Please help me. So, Krishna acts in mysterious ways, and his devotees, they act in mysterious ways. When we read the pastimes of Krishna's devotees and Krishna, we oftentimes see that Krishna will do things that's looks like, it has the appearance of, you know, Jnana Yoga, or Karma Yoga, or Dharma, or Artha Kama, or, you know, Moksha, you know, all of these different, you know, goals. For instance, I was reading in the Bhagavatam, in the 10th canto, after, I think it was after Narada Muni visits Krishna and all of this, 16,000 palaces. There's a description of Lord Krishna's daily pastimes, what he does every day. And if you read it, I overheard you. The younger Prabhu was saying that Krishna meditates on himself. That's true. It describes that. But if you read his daily activities, you're like, wow, I don't do any of those things. You know, he wakes up in the morning, and then he meditates. We chant japa, but it doesn't say Krishna's chanting japa. He's meditating. And then he worships the sun. Of course, he does say he chants Gayatri. That's one thing a lot of us do. But he worships the sun. He worships the demigods. He worships his forefathers. He worships ancestors. He worships the brahmanas. He gives cows in charity. There's many things he does that may confuse us. Well, why is he worshiping the demigods? We don't worship the demigods, you know, that sort of thing. In the Dharma Shastras, it's explained how it's a duty of every grihastha to give away our meals, you know, our food that we have, to give it away to needy. Then we have the story of Vantidev on the appearance of it, and it seems like he's just performing Dharma Shastra. Everyone knows the story, but it's a beautiful story of how, does anyone not know the story of Vantidev? Does anybody not know the story of Vantidev? No, that's, Vantidev is, so he was a king, and he underwent a 48-day fast. 48-day fast, and this is not an Ekadashi fast. This is a no food, no water fast for 48 days. And it actually, describes that his family members did that 48-day fast as well. Did you know that? His family also did the 48-day fast. And after the 48 days, you can just imagine, he was so hungry, he was so weak that he was trembling. You know, his like hands were like this, and he couldn't move. And somebody, and part of the vrata was that he would only accept what was given to him. So he could not make any endeavor to obtain food to eat. So that was part of the vrata, that he would only accept food that was given to him. So after his 48-day fast, he was given food that was made from ghee and milk. And that was his only food, and water. He had some water. And as soon as he was about to partake, a brahmana came, and he asked to be fed. And so he gave the brahmana food. And whatever was left over, he shared it with his family. He divided it in portions for his wife and his children and for himself. And then at that time, Shudra came. Now, it's explained that he actually did feed his family. And he didn't, starve his family. He fed his family after the brahmana came. So he fed the brahmana, and then he fed his family. And before he took, Shudra came. And he gave the Shudra, because he was asking for alms. So he gave him some food. And then a man, and I guess he was a dog eater, I guess. He had a bunch of dogs, and he came and he said, "Can you feed me and my dogs?" And basically, they ate the rest of his food. The dogs. He fed the dogs too. Dogs and the dog owner. And then a chandal came, the fourth. This is the fourth party that came. And all he had left was a glass of water. And he just gave him a glass of water. And he said that, "I don't pray for the eight mystic siddhis. I don't pray for liberation. My prayer is that I stay in the material world and I suffer the sufferings of all the living entities of this world, so that they don't have to suffer." That was his prayer. It was the same prayer that Vasudev Das gave, Prahlad Maharaj gave, that let me suffer so that others don't have to suffer. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he writes in his commentary that, you know, as a conjecture, that Vantidev Maharaj, that why don't you eat something, just eat a little bit, you know, so you don't have to suffer. He says, and his response was, I can tolerate my suffering, but I can't tolerate the suffering of others. I can tolerate any amount of suffering for myself, but I can't tolerate even a particle of suffering for someone else. It's a devotee, it's a Vaishnava. Bada dukkha dukkhi. The suffering of others is our own suffering. And so his prayer was actually to stay here in the material world and suffer. And suffer and suffer and suffer so that others won't have to suffer. So it's explained that from one perspective it could be seen that that is Dharma Shastra, according to the Dharma Shastra, giving away one's meal. He was in the Grihastha Ashram. He was giving away his meals in alms to others. But externally, but the path that we follow is not determined on any external behavior. The path is determined by what our goal is. So externally, somebody may be meditating or performing handstands and headstands or pranayam, or they may be going to work every day at a job and coming home externally. But that doesn't define the path. There's a famous pastime of Radharani and also Krishna in Goloka. And they were chanting the other person's name. So Krishna was chanting Radha, 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 Radha. And then he was meditating. And his meditation on Radha's name was so intense that his whole body changed color and became the complexion of Radharani. But when he was meditating, he could have been an Ashtanga. If you just look at him externally, here's, you know, Krishna. He's got his eyes closed. He's in the Padmasana position. He could be either doing Jnana Yoga, Sankhya Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, whatever yoga there is. Or he could be doing Bhakti Yoga. But actually, we know that his absorption on Radha's name with his eyes closed was the highest form of Radha Bhav, of absorption in love of Radharani and Radharani the same. In the same way, somebody might be going through a job and working his job and coming home getting a salary. Two people doing exactly the same thing, but what is their goal? One person might be doing it to their goal is to go to the heavenly planets to gain some pious activity, or their goal might be to go to Vaikuntha, or the impersonal Brahman, or to go to Goloka Vrindavan. So what is the goal that you're aspiring for? That determines which path you're on. Not so much with the external activity that you're doing. So, I read the story of Lord Chaitanya going to offer oblations to his forefathers and offer Shraddha for the passing away of his father, Jagannath Mishra. And again, the same way, there's so many activities that Lord Chaitanya did that were bewildering. Because he apparently was going there as following the path of Dharma Shastra. But in every activity that Lord Chaitanya did, he was inspiring and attracting those individuals who are on that respective path. But his own goal was for everyone to eventually come back to him on the path of bhakti, regardless of what their goal is, of the person that he's attracting. After his father passed away, Lord Chaitanya took permission from his mother, Sachimata, to go and visit the holy place of Gaya and to offer oblations to his father, perform the Shraddha ceremony. And he took along with him, he took his students. At that time, Lord Chaitanya was in the pastime of a scholar. And he was an undefeatable scholar in Navadvipa. Nobody could. Everyone was totally mesmerized, of course, but his associates were disturbed that Lord Chaitanya was not becoming a devotee of Krishna. And he noted that in addition to that, his associates were disturbed on seeing how the number of atheists in Navadvipa were growing on a daily basis. Every day there were more and more and more atheists in Navadvipa. And this pained the heart of Lord Chaitanya's associates. And out of compassion, Lord Chaitanya wanted to do something about it, because he could not see his devotees suffer. So he took his students to Gaya. And on the way, he stopped at the temple of Madhusudan. And on the way, they were having fun, joking with each other, and playing games. And after taking darshan of Madhusudan, he got a fever. He manifested a fever. So it's said that the reason why he set out, there's some reasons he wanted. There's so many different reasons you can take out of it. He wanted to visit a holy place. He wanted to offer shraddha to his fathers. He wanted to offer oblations to his forefathers. But when the whole pastime unfolds, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj explains that he's attracting the atheists by his pastimes. He's instilling faith to those who have faith in Varnashram. He's instilling faith in those people. For those who are on whichever path you're on, he's instilling faith in them, in whatever respective path that they're on. He's strengthened their faith on that particular path. So for the atheists, he tried to, since they want to forget Krishna, he inspired them to help them forget Krishna. For those who had faith in Varnashram Dharma, he inspired them to strengthen their faith in Varnashram. So when he manifested a fever, his students were in terrible anxiety. Like, oh my gosh, our Lord has a fever. And they were, one by one, they were giving him different medicines and different remedies, and nothing was working. He had this fever, and the students were in such immense distress. And finally, Lord Chaitanya says, I will prescribe my own prescription. What will cure me is the water that has bathed the feet of a Brahmin. So they found some brahmana somewhere, and they washed his feet, and they brought Lord Chaitanya this water that bathed the feet of a brahmana, and he immediately took it, and his fever went away, completely went away. And so he was teaching those that there is nothing to gain to disregard the principles of Varnashram. And for those who are, so there's two types of devotees. There's one type of devotee that takes shelter of Varnashram, that by following the path of Varnashram, ultimately I'll achieve moksha, I'll achieve liberation. And then there's another type of devotee who only has faith in Krishna. He completely takes shelter of Krishna. But there's nothing to gain by disregarding the injunctions of Varnashram. So they follow Varnashram. They're both devotees are following Varnashram perfectly. But one is taking shelter of Varnashram, and one is taking shelter of Krishna. That's the difference. So when he's drinking this water of the Brahmana, to those who are taking shelter of Varnashram, he says, yes, the Brahmanas are the topmost position in society, and we must take guidance from them. We must follow their example. And we must strictly follow the path of Varnashram. And to those who take shelter of Krishna, he's saying that don't disregard the injunction of Varnashram. Don't disturb the faith of those who are taking shelter of Varnashram. Follow Varnashram very, very strictly for the benefit of others. As an act of compassion, as an act of encouragement to others who haven't had that strong faith in the Supreme Lord. And Lord Chaitanya, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj explains that there's no need to disregard social customs, that we can be a pure devotee of Krishna and take shelter of Krishna. It's complete shelter of Krishna, and yet not disregard any of the ordinary social customs. In our day society, we'll go to funerals, or we'll go to weddings, or whatever those social customs are, whatever those social obligations are, we'll do them. There's no need to disregard those social customs. And Lord Chaitanya, he went to Gaya. Did he need to go to Gaya to do Shraddha? No. Of course not. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Advaita Acharya, he made Haridas Thakur was the first recipient of that. But did Advaita Acharya need to do Shraddha? No. But there's no need to disregard our social customs either. We don't take shelter of them, but there's no need to disregard them. That was what Lord Chaitanya was trying to teach in his example, in his own example of his pastime of going to Gaya. So after his fever was relieved, he continued, and he arrived at the holy place of Gaya, and he took bath in the Brahmakund, and he went to Chakraveda, which is a holy place where the footprints of Lord Vishnu is. And when he went there, it was an atmosphere of complete absorption. The brahmanas that were sitting there, they were chanting prayers, and on Lord Vishnu's feet there was so many garlands. It was like a temple dome. It was like a huge pile of flower garlands, and cloth, and incense, and there was the sandalwood paste was so thick, it was actually like a hill on Lord Vishnu's footprints. It's a huge mound of sandalwood paste. And the brahmanas, Lord Chaitanya, from Lord Chaitanya's perspective, he said the brahmanas that were around chanting prayers and glorification of Lord Vishnu's footprints, they looked like divine beings, ethereal beings, chanting these are the same feet that went on Bali Maharaj's head. These are the same feet that Lakshmi is massaging every day, every moment of every day. These are the same feet that the devotees take shelter of. These are This is the same feet. This is the same feet that's on Anantasesha, that's adorning Anantasesha. And those same feet are right here. Right here. They're making those prayers. And Lord Chaitanya, when he was hearing those prayers of glorifying Lord Vishnu's lotus feet, he started having ecstatic symptoms. The tears were shooting out of his eyes, and his hairs were standing on end. He was trembling. He was shaking. His whole body was covered with dust. He was rolling in the dust, and it's described that the tears coming out from Lord Chaitanya's eyes was like the flowing, the constant flowing of the river Ganga. And the brahmanas who are chanting prayers had never seen anything like that, and they were totally astounded. Who is this person? And at that moment, Ishwarapuri came. And Lord Chaitanya paid obeisances to Ishwarapuri, and Ishwarapuri embraced him. And it's explained that the tears from both of their eyes drenched their clothes, both of their clothes. And Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj says that this conversation that Ishwara Puri had with Lord Chaitanya gives the true import to those in the path of bhakti and why Lord Chaitanya went to Gaya. He said that the fruit of my coming to this holy place has now been fulfilled by meeting you. And Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj says that the purpose of going to a holy place is actually to have the association of the devotees. And the purpose that Lord Chaitanya had in going to Gaya was to surrender himself to Ishwarapuri and to take initiation from Ishwarapuri. That was the inner meaning of why he went to Gaya. And Lord Chaitanya told Ishwarapuri that I came here and I offered oblations to my forefathers. And maybe a handful of forefathers might be liberated, but just by taking your darshan, just by seeing you, millions and millions and millions of forefathers are delivered just by seeing you, having your darshan. And Ishwara Puri said that I had a dream last night, and the fruit of that dream is coming today by having your darshan. And that you are none other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How else is it possible that you have such vast learning and such opulence? So Lord Chaitanya then went to he did the full ritual of Shraddha, and he came back and he paid obeisances to Lord Vishnu's feet, and he cooked in his room, and he was in the kitchen, and Ishwarapuri came to his residence, and he fed Ishwarapuri a meal. And Ishwarapuri said, then, you know, you take with me. No, I'll cook. And he said, no, what's the need to cook again? Just divide it in half. And Lord Chaitanya insisted that he take. So he fed Ishwarapuri, and it said that Lord Chaitanya's consort cooked in the kitchen for Lord Chaitanya. So Lord Chaitanya didn't actually have to cook a second time. And then he honored. And then after he served Ishwarapuri that lunch, he went to his to-be spiritual master, his birthplace, Kumarahat. And when he went there, the only thing that he was chanting was the name of his to-be spiritual master. He was chanting Ishwarapuri, 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 just over and over and over again, rolling in the dust. And he grabbed some of that dust and he put it in the cloth, and he tied it around his waist, cloth from the birthplace of his spiritual master, and he came back to Gaya. And then he approached the spiritual master in a solitary place and asked for initiation. And his response was, what to speak of a mantra, I'll give you my life. So Lord Chaitanya was initiated into the 10-syllable mantra. And he was chanting this mantra one day. And this was the beginning of his pastimes of delivering prema bhakti and inundating prema bhakti, or inundating the world with prema bhakti and the bliss, the rasa, the holy name, the Sankirtan movement. And he told his students that, I'm not going to return back to material life, I'm going to Vrindavan to go back. And they tried to pacify him. It didn't work. And then the next morning, while everyone was sleeping, he just left to Mathura. And then he heard a voice in the sky that this is not the time to go to Mathura. Go back to Navadvip and start your Sankirtan pastimes. The time to go to Vrindavan will be later. So he went. He returned back to Navadvip and ended his pastime of visiting Gaya. Thank you very much. Would anyone like to say anything? Raju Bhartam Ki Jai.